From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 257 with guest Stacia Miser, recorded Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you are listening to Run As Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Today, my guest is Stacia Miser, and she has over 25 years' experience with improving business practices through technology and over 12 years' experience with implementing Microsoft Business Intelligence. She's an independent consultant, speaker, instructor, and author. And what did we met at dinner the other day. Where was that? The MVP Summit.
We were at the MVP Summit.
Right. And had a good chat about all things technology. You have been messing around with this business intelligence stuff since Microsoft first got into it way back in the beginning.
Well, I don't go all the way back to the beginning, but a fair amount. I started working with their tools in the year 2000.
That was, they acquired the product. I can't remember the name of the company.
Yes, they worked with Panorama. So
right.
Panorama had the OLAP engine and they had a front end tool, and Microsoft purchased the OLAP engine, and Panorama kept up with their front end tool, and they're still out there today, and
still
they are a partner with Microsoft. And
but the engine sure has evolved. I remember that early version, and it was pretty primitive.
Yes, and it's funny. I just got an email this morning from someone looking for some help in migrating from that platform up to at least the 2008 R2, and asking what kinds of things that they might need to think about for the migration. And I thought, wow, that's a big step.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a huge jump.
Coming from, so the architecture changed quite a bit. You know, it was pretty functional, and you know, there were a lot of big things that we could do even with that platform. It's just hard to believe, because it does look somewhat dated now. If you were to look at a cube in Analysis Services 2000 versus a cube in Analysis Services 2012.
Yeah.
But, you know, you make things work.
Yeah, you found a way. And we did some clever things in 2000, a lot of timetables and just ways to allow us to organize the data the way we wanted to. But a lot of that's much more built in now.
Yes and no.
Really?
For somebody like me who understands the product very thoroughly, I am more inclined to build everything from scratch and not take advantage of those tools. What Microsoft did in the intervening years, and this is a good thing, because what happens is you've got different kinds of users out there, or different kinds of people who are building cubes. You've got your traditional IT group that has a mission to deliver data analysis in some way, and they've got to scale, and they've got to secure, and they've got to cleanse the data sources, and there's a lot of things that are going on there, and there may be some complexities in the data that they need to deal with as well. So that's one group. Then you've got a completely other group of maybe somebody in the finance department or somebody in the sales department that just says, I want data, I want to analyze it, and Excel by itself isn't going to cut it.
Right.
I need something a little bit more robust than Excel. And by robust, I mean handling bigger volumes, and certainly Excel can accommodate larger volumes than it used to. But still, Excel caps out at a million records. And even then, you probably don't want to be playing with a million records in Excel.
No, pretty painful. But and you bring up the most salient point, which is the mortals, the regular guys, are always in Excel.
Yes.
That's where they go to mess with data.
Exactly. And so while it's very good, it has some limitations. And the thing that's really great about Excel is the ability to do some amazing calculations. But it does have some limitations in terms of scale. And so that's where Analysis Services steps in. So there was a lot of folks out there that were building cubes that had no idea what they were doing.
Right. Because you didn't need to know much. You know, there was a wizard that would lead you down the golden path, more
right.
or less.
And that's what I was going to say. That was kind of the big shift. So from 2000 to 2005, we had this architectural shift in that we had kind of this attribute hierarchy. So you weren't thinking solely in terms of dimensions and measures, but now you have attributes in there. So it kind of blended this idea of hierarchical groupings as well as just I have reporting groupings. So
right.
That was the first phase. And then in 2008, I would say that the big shift there, it didn't change architecturally, but in targeting the audience. So for those folks who were trying to build cubes, you know, they could get themselves into trouble. So there were wizards that helped, but there were a lot of things that you had to know in order to get the optimal design or the optimal performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 2008 version of analysis services built in some guidance, the best practice warnings, things that would clue you in visually on the screen to draw your attention to something and say, hey, here's a problem, you know, here's how you might want to fix this. And so that was really oriented to the people who were more casual users or casual developers of analysis services. So they didn't have to read a 100-page white paper in order to get this thing to work. So that was a huge step forward. But as I teach in my classes, you know, you kind of take those best practices as a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
So
they are generalizations.
They are. And so that's where experience comes into play. If you understand the rationale behind a particular warning, then you can decide, does that apply to me in this particular case? So it's gotten easier with those wizards, absolutely. But then, you know, Microsoft wasn't content to leave it there. That's when they came out with Power Pivot for Excel.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're back in the Excel environment and doing essentially a cube inside of Excel. So the back end to Power Pivot, which is a free download, it installs what's called, well, today it's called the VertiPack engine. The new name, there's a new marketing name for this called X Velocity. That's fairly recent breaking news in the space. But they decided that there were so many technologies springing out of this concept that they needed a more overarching name for it. But essentially, Power Pivot for Excel is building a cube in the background. And so you never see things that call it a dimension or a measure explicitly
right.
in the interface. But essentially, people can grab data and model it within this, what's technically not inside of Excel. You're opening up an Excel workbook, but there's a completely other interface.
And this is not requiring analysis services. If you want to pull directly from a database, you can.
Correct. And the beauty of it is, now let's kind of step back. With analysis services, you must be in a relational database.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be SQL Server, but it must be relational.
Mm-hmm.
With Power Pivot, the beauty there is it can come from anywhere. It can come from a database. It can come from Azure Data Market.
Right.
It can come from a reporting services report. You can suck the data out of it and pull it into the Power Pivot environment.
Mm-hmm.
Text files, you can copy and paste something off of a web page and paste it in. You could type something into Excel and hook it in. So the idea there is that you're not going through all of this traditional ETL, the extract, transform,
right.
load processes to build a formal data mart, that you're just pulling this data together.
But it seems very one time.
It could be, and oftentimes it is, and that's
mm-hmm.
the benefit of it, because IT, if I came to you as a user and say, I need thus and so into a cube, IT is going to go, for one time? No way, we don't have time for
no,
that.
No, it makes no sense.
Right. So the Power Pivot for Excel enables the users to say, I'm going to mash together some data and analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a one-time deal, no problem, because
right.
it's quick and easy to do. But if it's something that becomes useful and other people want it, then what they can do is move to another product called Power Pivot for SharePoint.
Interesting.
And this allows us to put it into a centralized location, so it would be in a library in SharePoint. And then SharePoint can set up schedules for the data refresh. So you're not having to reproduce this mashup of data every single time. You're not having to combine everything. As long as you can point to a data source and say, go get that data.
Or data sources, really.
Yeah.
This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server. Most of the time when I see a really interesting analysis, it has come from two or three or four different data sources being combined.
Right. And it may be a one-off situation where we just have this bit of information today. How does that change things today? And, of course, you can pull data in from analysis services as well in Power Pivot, although it's not as friendly.
But I can see a case where you would do Power Pivot to prove this is a valuable analysis for action and sort of put that result in front of IT to say, you know, let's make this a routine thing. And now they can go to the expense and effort of automating because you've already proven the value.
Exactly. We see that we need to do this. And in fact, IT can, if they're paying attention, can observe kind of a trending in popularity of things. So the other benefit of putting things into Power Pivot for SharePoint is, yes, you're letting users do what they will with the data.
Right.
But in the Power Pivot for SharePoint environment, IT has tools that basically analyze what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can see which workbooks are being used. They can see which data sources are being accessed. They can see who's doing it, how often it's being used. They can see something that maybe came out of nowhere and all of a sudden is the thing that everybody looks at on Monday morning. And, you know, so they can monitor server resources, how much CPU, how much memory is going on. So if something's starting to require a lot of resources on the server, or if it's something that's really becoming popular, they can zero in on that and say, hey, is this something that we need to standardize and make an official IT-managed sort of a thing? So you can kind of have this transition. So it may not even be something that you're trying to prove initially. It may be just we have this thing, and eventually it grows in importance. And that happens a lot, too.
Sure. You know? It's sort of that indigenous data analytics.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating, and I love the idea that we can support this, that what grows out of that we can actually pick up on it and help people with.
Yeah, and, you know, when Power Pivot came out, IT people were very concerned, you know, that we'd let people have access to data on their own.
It sounded like query by example tools once again, you know, trashing my databases and creating erroneous reports.
Yeah. So there is that risk. I mean, that's certainly something within corporate culture you have to establish when you're making decisions. What is the, you know, lineage of this information?
Right.
Where did it come from? Who put it together? And certainly within SharePoint, there's ways that we can attribute lineage and, you know, understand who's creating things so we can see where the data is coming from. And certainly the more managed it is, the more likely it is to be the sanctioned data. But I was at the BI conference a couple years ago where there was a birds of a feather session going on, and you know, there was this discussion going back and forth about how much freedom to give users. And I just remember this guy sitting there. I think he had a Hawaiian t-shirt on, but I could be wrong. But he basically was sitting back, looked kind of like a surfer dude, and he was just like, man, let the data be free. It was just hysterical.
Hippie data analytics. I love it.
Yeah, because, you know, no matter what IT tries to do to impose barriers to data, people will get at the data.
Sure.
Whether that means they're going to go and key it in directly into a spreadsheet.
Yeah, even if they have to do that,
yeah,
you know, that's what they're going to end up doing. But there is this point, and it's certainly an issue I've run into, that we start acting on erroneous data.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate getting into that situation where somebody has now demonstrated that this report is inaccurate and from then on questions any data that comes out of anything.
Right.
You know, the answer is not what do we do about this, it's don't worry about that, that's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a bad place to get to.
Yeah, and that's a people problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a technology problem.
And, well, yeah, it's easy to fool yourself with data, too.
Yeah.
You know, you really can construct your own mythos if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Power Pivot for Excel sounds great, right? but it still has some limitations. And, you know, it's not the answer to everything. It still has some issues with scale. You know, it's certainly a bigger scale that it can accommodate than the just Excel by itself.
Sure.
And it's easier to put together than, you know, your casual user trying to go into analysis services. But really, the ironic thing is that if you're going to get the best performance and the easiest way to work with the data, mm-hmm. you're still going to structure all of this data that you're pulling together from multiple places into the same type of dimensional model, even if we don't call it a star schema.
Right.
Really, that's what it needs to look like.
And is this about performance primarily, just dealing with these large sets?
I think performance is part of it, and also relationships mm-hmm. In the data, and just getting things to align properly. But, you know, it's getting better. There's a tool out there, and I haven't really studied this, you know, kind of projecting into the future. Where are we going? So we've got this power pivot. Now we've got a business intelligence semantic model, which is the server-based version. This tabular mode is kind of the mode that we're calling this when we take the same type of structure that we have in Power Pivot for Excel and just put it into a server environment.
Hmm.
And so we get into some scale. There's some advantages there. We get into some hierarchical structures that we didn't have in earlier versions. This is all coming out with the 2012.
Sure. You said in the earlier versions, was it 2005 or 2008, we had the unified dimensional model?
Yes. So 2005 was when that was introduced.
Okay.
And that has been replaced in 2012 with something we call the business intelligence semantic model.
All right. So this is the next version of UDM, essentially?
Yes.
Okay. Is it better?
I mean, I wouldn't say better. It's just expanding options.
Okay.
So we have the multidimensional mode that we've always had, mm-hmm. you know, so that's covered by this business intelligence semantic model. And tabular is also covered by this. So you can think of the way that I think about it, because it's a very nebulous concept, and I don't think anybody's really gotten a handle on it. But the way I think of it myself is it's the modeling language. It's how the internals describe it. So if you can think, it's not technically XML,
mm-hmm.
but you can think of it that way.
Okay.
As being a schema that describes the model.
Okay.
And so because UDM was very multidimensional in nature, and tabular is a different structure, they needed something, you know, more expansive to be able to address both.
I mean, tabular sounds simpler too.
It does sound simpler, and the advantage there is again, you have, you basically, it's power pivot on the server.
Right.
You're using different tools. We don't have Business Intelligence Development Studio anymore. We have SQL Server Data Tools. And you can go in there and either build your multidimensional mode or your tabular mode. Now, there are two different instances of servers, I should point out. So the way that it handles memory, the way that it handles storage is completely different.
Hmm.
So if you want to support both modes, then you need to install two instances of analysis services.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, two totally separate instances.
Yes. Yeah. Because the way they work is completely different.
Wow, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, they can be side-by-side.
On the same machine?
Yes.
Okay.
But again, you know, then you start getting into resource contention. So
yeah, how do I keep both data? Do they do their own ETL processes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's all different.
So we're basically doubling the extraction out of the source databases.
Right.
Ouch.
Potentially.
Hmm.
But the tabular mode might be smaller data set. So,
right.
You know, it's just hard to say exactly what's going on there. So the tabular mode is basically putting Power Pivot into more of a server architecture.
Right. So pre-computed. I mean, the main thing this is going to do to the Power Pivot folks is speed everything up.
Right. And it partitions. It adds partitionings, which Power Pivot by itself does not have.
Okay.
And that means that you can reprocess partitions individually. So you don't have to reload all of the data. You can just reload it in sections.
Right. I mean, this sounds like exactly the trouble that people get into. You know, a smart guy comes up with a clever analysis, combines a few different sources of data, and people get really excited about it. And the set gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the runs are taking all night.
Yeah.
And then he comes to IT and says, okay, help me. And it sounds like we can.
Yeah.
That we go to this tabular model, we partition out the data chunks, figure out what's stable and leave it alone, only recompute what we need to, cuts down the processing time, data accuracy is high. I mean, that's a pretty compelling model all in all.
It is. It is. And then you want to use it, right? Mm. So then we have Power View, which is a client reporting tool. It does require SharePoint Enterprise mm-hmm. Edition, but it sits on top of either the tabular mode or the Power Pivot for SharePoint.
Okay.
So it's really simple to use. I think if you gave a user, 15 minutes with it, they'd be off and running. And it's a drag and drop interface. And I've been in the reporting space for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm always skeptical when I see something that, is self-service and
yeah.
it's so easy to use.
We have been told this lie for 30 years.
Yes. But I have to say and then it's one thing watching a demo also, because demos are demos.
And demos always work great.
They always look easy. And so when I finally sat down and worked with it myself, I went, this really is easy. they are definitely on the right path here. Now, it's got some advanced features that, are kind of interesting and take some thought to set mm-hmm. up that might be beyond, what the casual user is going to do. But I think getting started, it's very interesting and very visual and very compelling.
Right.
And something, but the requirement is you're going to have this tabular mode or the Power Pivot for SharePoint. So.
And it sounds like we're helping out the guys doing the analysis by bringing all those data sources into sort of one place.
Yeah.
So we get rid of that complexity. Although I got to bet the process of transforming a working Power Pivot analysis that is pulling, say, three or four different data sources, something from an Atom feed, something from the Azure Data Marketplace, that kind of thing, switching that over to the back end doing that work and having the same results come out of your Power Pivot, that's got to be some work.
Not really.
Really?
Not really. I mean, getting the model right is going to be your work.
Right.
That's where the work is. Once you want to get that into the server environment,
mm-hmm.
then it's just a matter of publishing it and setting up schedules for the data refresh.
Right. And then you've got to modify that old Power Pivot report to use the new sources.
No.
Really?
Uh-uh.
How do you avoid that?
I mean, it's not using a new source. It's just refreshing the data. So what's happening is it's the data that's being stored there is mm-hmm. just being replaced with the refreshed data.
Right.
So it's not pointing to a different source. It's just updating that. So what happens is, architecturally, you have this file that gets loaded into memory or unloaded from memory, but the data persists in this file and
okay.
it's refreshed as needed. Now, I can go from Power Pivot into Tabular. There's a mechanism that allows me to basically move the data into the tabular mode. And then there might be some work in terms of setting up partitions and some other things. But fundamentally, if the model's right, then there's not a lot that you're going to have to do.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing.
And so the main result would be suddenly this Power Pivot runs much faster. We can put it on a schedule, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And then looking forward, I mean, the other thing that's kind of interesting, this is still in SQL Azure Labs. Kind of a glimpse into the future is something called Data Explorer.
Hmm.
And it's fascinating. It basically is the same idea of getting data from anywhere, except this can be either a cloud-based solution, so you're doing this through a browser.
Right.
Or there's a desktop client available as well. But, you can take any data. It's not so much modeling your data up front, but exploring data, as the name implies, and saying, okay, this is the data that I'm looking for, and it's seeing tabular relationships or lists of things. And I saw this demonstration just to give you an idea of the power of it. So mm-hmm. the idea was that I want to look at the top 10 films of a particular year.
Right.
And I want to go out and find out who's the actors that are in this film. And I want to then find out, what are the top 10 Twitter tweets out there related to these films. And oh, by the way, I want to go find out when what the show times are. Are these things playing in my area? And I watched a demonstration go through this process in probably, well, less than 30 minutes, certainly, and probably faster than that if they didn't have to stop and explain everything they were doing along the way.
Well, how were they doing the data discovery part? Like, how did they find
this? Data? Some of it they had to know.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have to know that they used Bing, for example, for the showtime.
Right.
But it was just a query, you know, here's this. Or they went to Wikipedia, I think, for the top 10 films. So you're pointing at specific places.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is that aspect of figuring out, where do I want to go? I know I want to go to Twitter. I know I want to go to Bing. I know I want to go to Wikipedia, those sorts of things. But it was, and I think you can actually create these data sources and then make them available as OData feeds as
well. And I was thinking, is you're looking for OData feeds.
Yeah. And it's rather fascinating. So this where we're heading, kind of circling back to this idea of, you know, good data versus bad data.
Mm-hmm.
This term that I'm hearing a lot lately is data curation.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that people, whoever they may be, inside your organization or outside of the organization, will be masters at certain kinds of data that they will be compiling. And they will say, you know, this is the official data for XYZ. And rather than you trying to, you know, pull all the stuff together, you can go to these curated data sources. So it's really fascinating. I mean, think about now if you go to any kind of news aggregation, you know, we probably all have our favorite readers of some sort.
Right.
That will tune into the kinds of things that interest us. And, you know, or there's places that we trust. You know, this person pulls together the kind of information that I'm interested in, therefore I'm going to, you know, watch their feeds. And it's going to be the same sort of thing with data itself.
Yeah. And let the people who have a sense of that data and have experience with it be the curators by their own actions rather than by, you know, giving it a role.
Yeah. And so I still think it's kind of out there a little bit. This data explorer is not for, you know, casual user.
Sure.
But when you see the direction that it's going, it could be. I mean, it's definitely moving that direction. And so, you know, what it will look like 10 years from now, you know, maybe even 5 years from now, it just kind of blows my mind
mm-hmm.
of what's possible. Certainly it makes me think, you know, is my my career choice on the line here? Are they going to need me anymore to help them with this stuff?
But, well, in some ways, I really like providing these self-service portals because it gets people hooked on the data.
Yeah.
And they variably need our help at some point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really want to pick the easy ones anymore.
Right. That's true.
You know, let them do the easy stuff on their own and get to a point of sophistication where like, okay, now I'm over my head, you know, bring in the experienced folks that can to take us to a different level or can validate these results or improve the performance on them, really, you know, get things stable.
Yeah.
I keep finding BI projects where we start off with the mother of all cubes, right?
Yeah.
They throw everything in the kitchen sink into that cube and then from that find some interesting results. And you need to sort of peel off those interesting sets so that they stay lean and performant and focused on what's important.
Yeah.
I can't live on a mother cube anymore.
Well, I've never advocated building one in the first place just for that very reason because I know that's not going to be the right approach.
It's never a good long-term strategy, but it seems for a short-term strategy, just when you don't know what you don't know,
right?
That's a place to start. We'll throw it all in a heap and see what comes out of that. But I think you sound more like a planner.
I am.
You think about your data in advance and sort of work through what important relations would be there.
Yeah, in fact, I have what I call the right to left approach.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, so many folks that do BI projects, you know, particularly IT people, they look at their data and they say, "How am I going to model this data?" And they move left to right. If you kind of think of your traditional diagram, where you have your data sources on the left and your data warehouse in the middle, and the people on the right, and they'll move it from left to right, and then they wonder, you know, why people aren't using this stuff. And I say, because that approach is wrong. You really need to go right to left. You need to get in the head of the business people and say, what is it that they're trying to solve? What problem is they're trying to solve? And think about what kind of model answers those kinds of questions.
Sure.
Then we can go back and say, okay, where's the data that helps me support this model? But I don't even want to look at the data initially. I want to look at what kinds of questions are being asked. And that's why I don't get into that mother of all cubes kind of a thing, because typically, as we analyze the kinds of questions, we see natural groupings of things that go together well and things that don't.
Right.
And, you kind of see how to separate them off that way.
Where do you fall on the data mining concepts of letting the technology find interesting relations and correlations?
It's interesting mm-hmm. in terms of technology. It's certainly getting better. And I think there are companies who are doing it and doing it well. But this idea of data mining for the masses, it still hasn't really taken root.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's probably going to be a while. I mean, there's kind of stages of maturity. I mean, a lot of people are still at the, I just need a report,
yes.
let alone analyze things. So the data mining stuff is really kind of future.
Yeah, it does seem like a specialized skill.
Yeah.
But as we see these sort of big data tools evolving, the data miners are becoming more prevalent.
Yes, and what we do see, and this is coming out in the SQL Server 2012 release, mm-hmm. is taking some of that technology and applying it to the data cleansing process.
Right.
So that's an interesting development. So it may not be used directly in terms of helping us figure out how to do better business, but it's certainly much more practical today in terms of helping us get to better data.
And over on the sister show, .NET Rocks, the sort of source show for everything I've ever done, we just published a show on data quality services.
Okay.
Which was really an interesting set of thinking around that problem.
Yeah.
That lets keep records and sort of structure around how we want to improve the quality of our data, and rather than just writing on the data, keep the rule set so you can always reapply it.
Yeah. It's huge.
Really intelligent thinking on Microsoft's part. Again, I hear an acquisition, that they bought that product and have tied it to SSIS to some degree.
Yeah. So, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, find a way to solve the problem for the customers of how we more and more are running into the situation. And I do like your approach. If I go to the users to find out what they want, chances are I'm going to discover that there's a particular nugget of information that's not currently being stored, and I have to start importing data from other sources.
Yeah.
And that comes totally into this data quality issue.
Yeah.
Can I bring that data in a form that's going to work with my data well?
Correct.
And that's hard. Those are hard problems.
It is a hard problem.
But exciting stuff. I mean, I think we're only getting better here. 2012 is really quite compelling.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. I mean, obviously, we've seen a lot of change over the years, and each version has had something interesting about it. But mm-hmm. I think we're really kind of at that to borrow a phrase here, a pivot point.
Nice.
But it's really changing things dramatically for us, and it's going to be an exciting time over the next few years as we see the benefits of all these changes really ripple out into the way we do business.
And we've given up on trying to build third-party clients. Essentially, it is Excel.
It is Excel. Interestingly enough,
mm-hmm.
That's where people are at.
Yeah, they've got it. They know it. They love it. They trust it.
Yeah.
Why build something else?
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably have ancillary tools that do specialized sorts of things, but certainly Excel is the place to be. And because interaction with data is not simply a static thing,
mm-hmm.
right? You're not just looking at it. Then you probably want to take it and do something with it. And Excel gives us that ability that, I can take a calculation and I can fiddle with something and right there within that same environment. So why recreate something that does that?
Yeah, absolutely. And the power pivot for SharePoint. I mean, it sounds like this ends up being a non-optional feature. Is this a reason, if you're not already running SharePoint, to start running it?
It certainly can be.
Mm-hmm.
There's different kinds of organizations, and for some folks, this SharePoint requirement is a barrier.
Right.
And I don't see that changing anytime soon. But it's SharePoint Enterprise, furthermore,
mm-hmm.
so it's not an inexpensive proposition.
Yeah.
So there's certainly, a size of organization where it's going to be a no-brainer. And for other organizations, then, you know, it's going to be a barrier, at which point, you know, just using Power Pivot for Excel is going to be adequate, but they certainly lose out on other things. So it just becomes a point at which, you know, where's the pain point?
And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to IT folks who said, no, we don't have any SharePoint. And then we've actually gone around, done some sniffing, and they have indigenous SharePoint. You know, the people are standing it up even if they haven't told you, because they're using it for collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they've got the funds to get it, then it makes no sense not to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems essential. And I struggled, one of my personal missions has been to figure out what it is that puts SharePoint into companies in the first place.
Right.
Other than this sort of viral, because the people thought they should have it and then got hooked on it.
Right.
But this, to me, seems like one of the more compelling things. When you really want to centralize this power pivot of information and instrument it well enough that you know what's important and what isn't.
Yeah.
That seems pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's the only way you're going to be able to do that.
Well, Stacia, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate your insights.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.